Lake Effect brings you conversations about what's happening in Milwaukee and the people, places, and organizations that shape our community. This is Lake Effect Spotlight from WUWM, Milwaukee's NPR. A new crop is taking root in the upper Midwest, hazelnuts. Many curious farmers are drawn to the novelty of a native nut. Farmland in the upper Midwest is mostly used for corn and soybeans, and most hazelnuts are grown overseas. Perennial crops like hazelnuts bring many climate benefits. They suck up agricultural pollution and lock up planet warming carbon, and they hold on to soil that otherwise quickly erodes from farmland. WUWM's Lena Tran went to a farm in Plymouth, Wisconsin, where farmers gathered to learn about the crop. We'll hear from some of those farmers first, then Lena speaks with Jason Fishbach from the Upper Midwest Hazelnut Development Initiative. It's a research hub that formed to support this emerging industry.
I'm Deborah. I do love the plant. I like growing them. I haven't had great success because of the critters, but it still gets me out and I'm learning a lot and enjoying it. I think it was just because it's a perennial crop and I was excited to think about how that could be a very healthful thing for the soils and for wildlife.
Tom Grip. I just started growing them about 20 years ago. Initially, for the first 10 years, it was just a complete hobby. And now that I've retired, it's my retirement hobby is planting hazelnuts and various other sorts of fruit and berry. Where I live in the Driftless area, we have terrible problems with soil erosion. And every time I turn the soil over, a lot of it washes away. So I have the good fortune to own some land, and so I just thought I'd look into planting different things.
My name is Jan.
Are you already like...
My husband and I have 5 acres up near Shiocton, and he's got about 300 trees in right now. Pat with the green bandana.
Oh, okay.
Well, I don't know what she told you, but we ran a professional landscape service for lawn maintenance and landscape service for over 20 years. So we were in the green industry. We moved from landscaping to farming, hobby farm, obviously, small, 5 acres. And we started with apples. And by visiting the apple seminars in the universities, you go to Hazelnuts real quick and you find Jason, and he runs an excellent program. And at this point, I wish I didn't have the apple trees and I just had all hazelnuts.
Really? What is it about hazelnuts?
I think they're just going to be so easy to grow, and the uniqueness.
The uniqueness because it's from here.
Uniqueness says then you can't really find anybody that has a hazelnut field like you can an apple field. Being from Appleton, there's probably 20 orchards within 10 minutes of the city. I think we're the only hazelnut orchard within 10 minutes from the city. The biggest challenge, of course, there's always the money, but to do it right. And again, Jason and everybody at the university have been wonderful telling us the correct way to do it. So you don't have to rip it out and do it again and rip it out and do it again. So hopefully we're doing it right the first time.
Jason Fishbach with the University of Wisconsin Madison Division of Extension, and I'm the Emerging Crops Outreach Specialist.
What is your hazelnut origin story?
I don't even remember anymore.
Because it's been so long?
Yeah, pretty much. So I got interested in hazelnuts when I was in grad school back in 2003. But then when I moved up to Ashland and took a job with UW Extension as the agriculture agent for the two counties, one of my charges was to help diversify the ag economy up here. Our rural counties, far away from markets, like elsewhere in the country, well, in Wisconsin, has seen a decline in the number of small and medium-sized dairy herds. So for example, in Bayfield County, we went from 120 to about 5 dairy farms. You know, it's just complete collapse of the dairy economy. So we needed to find other options for farmers and for the ag economy, and started looking around, and turns out that there's this plant that grows wild all over Bayfield County called American hazelnut. So the analog to cranberries is really pretty good, because cranberries, that industry started from a plant that was growing in the wild. And so at the time, I naively thought, oh, no problem. We'll just turn American hazelnut into a crop, just like we did with cranberries. But easier said than done. So we're still working at it. Ultimately, the goal is to develop the hazelnut industry in the upper Midwest, centered around the American hazelnut germplasm. And it turns out it has all kinds of other climate benefits if we can do this at scale.
Yeah. So germplasm, meaning you're using some of the genetic material from what's growing in the wild and trying to breed that with other things to work better for commercial purposes?
Exactly. Yeah. So there's two approaches to our breeding program. The first is just simple search and screen. You know, no one's ever looked at these wild American hazelnut populations for really nice plants that could support commercial production, large nuts, good production year to year, good pest resistance. So we've started doing that in 2007, I think, is when we first started, you know, just tromping around the woods looking for cool plants, make copies of it. That's trying to develop cultivars of pure American hazelnut. Then the other approach, which was farther along when we started, because a lot of our early adopters and private breeders started, I mean, it goes back 100 years, but they crossed the European hazelnut, which supplies 99.99% of the global hazelnut market. They crossed European hazelnut with American hazelnut to try to get the best of both worlds, because European hazelnut can't survive the winters or disease pressure up here, but American hazelnut just doesn't produce large enough nuts for hazelnut markets. So the goal is to combine the traits of two and come up with the good cultivars that growers can grow. We've done it. We've got our top 5 to 10 cultivars that we have identified from that breeding work. And I'm actually standing in a greenhouse today where we're working on propagation to try to make more copies of these for growers, because it turns out it's really hard to propagate, which has slowed down our industry a lot.
Huh. Well, you mentioned some of those benefits that you discovered along the way. Can you dig into why hazelnuts are so compelling as we consider, you know, what it looks like for Wisconsin agriculture to adapt to climate change?
Sure. Okay. So the first is the actual change in carbon dynamics from agricultural landscapes, right? And this is big. For this to work, it has to be at a big scale. And there's a lot of factors at play whether or not this will actually happen. But we know that a transition from a meat-based to a plant-based diet is one really effective tool to reduce carbon emissions from agricultural lands. And hazelnuts are a super protein source. So if more people ate nuts and ate less meat, then we could reduce carbon emissions. Okay, but there's a lot of variables in that, right? But that's one benefit to hazelnuts, because we don't really have a nut crop for the upper Midwest, particularly Wisconsin and Minnesota. And so this would be our region's first nut crop. The second thing then would be, if it's deployed at scale, we reduce tillage, and we can actually build soil organic matter and fix more carbon, both in the plants themselves, but also reductions in soil disturbance, because this is a long-lived perennial crop, you know, that live for 100 years easily. Okay, so you got carbon sequestration benefits potentially. Then on the other side is carbon mitigation, right? So we're dealing with larger storm events, more erosive storm events. And anytime we can keep roots in the ground with perennial plants, that's just going to help protect those soils from storm events and the runoff events that we keep getting more and more of.
Mm-hmm.
And that you don't necessarily need as big a scale if you do it strategically. If you put these woody perennials in areas that are particularly conducive to erosion, or put it in ways that you can at least stop the soil from upstream from moving further downstream. So strip plantings, riparian buffers, planting on slopes, all that kind of stuff. So that's why we're excited about hazelnuts as a crop. Of course, this goes nowhere unless people start eating hazelnuts. So part of this also is market development.
Right. I mean, what does that look like for you?
At the end of the day, this is up to farmers and consumers to figure out. But at the university, we're just trying to set the stage for success, applying lessons that we've learned from other crops. So one thing we know is for a capital intensive crop like hazelnuts, it's really helpful if you're clustered with other growers, because then it makes it way easier to share things like harvesting equipment, processing equipment. It makes it easier to pool volume so you can access bigger markets. when we get small plantings scattered all over the place, it can make it really hard to develop efficient supply chains. So by working with our grower community up front here and trying to encourage them or help them form grower clusters, that's a big part of what we're trying to do. And that sets the stage then for, hopefully, they can access bigger markets at price points that consumers can pay, and they also can make money. The game then from a profitability standpoint is, if farmers are just selling a commodity and all of the upstream value added is owned by other people, not the growers, then the growers just aren't going to be successful. So we're trying to help the growers own that value chain so they can capture as much of that retail food dollar as they can, because it's going to make their system better. So that's where something like the American Hazelnut Company, we formed that in 2014. So it gives an opportunity for their member growers to own that value chain and actually produce a value-added product that they can take to market. Because one thing we've seen is, as other industries, other hazelnut production regions grow, oftentimes they're left to just selling to the biggest buyers, and that would be Ferrero. Maker of
the delicious chocolates.
Yep. And roughly 40% of the world's hazelnut supply goes to Nutella. And so, you know, Nutella is a huge product. They have to have low prices. They really squeeze their suppliers. And so you get paid global commodity prices.
Right.
We would rather our growers produce Nutella, you know, or some version of it, some high grossing, high margin, value-added hazelnut product that they own from production of the nuts all the way to the sale, to, you know, retail sale to the consumer. Long story short, we're just trying to apply other successes from other industries to our fledgling hazelnut industry, try to set them up for success.
This is WUWM's Lena Tran, and you're listening to Lake Effect. My guest is Jason Fishbach. He's with the Upper Midwest Hazelnut Development Initiative. So this hub of researchers and emerging crop specialists, it started back in 2007. I'm curious, what is the challenge that kind of defines this phase of the work?
We launched in 2007, and by far the number one priority was genetics, plant breeding, trying to develop improved cultivars. And now that we've at least progressed there, the number one bottleneck by far is propagation. If we can't get copies of these good plants out to growers, we've got nothing. So mm-hmm. That's why, you know, that's where I spend most of my time these days, is trying to figure this out, try to find methods and nursery partners and everybody else to stand up a team that can get these plants produced. And we're making progress, but it's still way too slow. To give you some perspective where we're at, our goal is 20,000 acres by 2030. That's going to require 9 million plants. Right now, we're producing maybe a 1,500 to 2,000 a year. So we've got a long way to go.
And this is just kind of like a quirk of the plant itself.
It's hard to get. So there's different methods that you use, but a pretty common one is via stem cuttings. So you take a piece off the mother plant and you stick it in soil with some rooting hormone, and ideally it grows roots and then continues growing. This is how it's done with many different industries. Hazelnuts don't do that. We're making progress figuring out a protocol for how to do it, but it's not working very well.
Mm-hmm.
The other way that woody crop industries are propagated, tissue culture, where you're generating a new cell from a single bud and you're doing it in the lab and then growing out those microplants. And hazelnuts also don't do well in tissue culture. It appears it has something to do with American hazelnut, which is, we think, because it's adapted to really dry, sandy soils, its stress response is to just stop growing and go dormant.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing we want the plant to do when it's being propagated, it needs to be actively growing. So anytime we take a cutting or do something as part of the propagation process, we're disturbing that plant. It's in stress mode, and so it stops growing. So that's what we're fighting against, is that in American hazelnut. But of course, it's not all American hazelnut plants, right? There's some genotypes that are relatively easy to propagate. Just turns out it's not the ones that we want to propagate.
Yeah. That's so interesting. Like, what is your relationship with hazelnuts now? You know, years, almost 20 years later, it's your white whale. It's really stubborn. how do you think about this thing in your life?
That's a good question. It definitely, there are days of frustration, you know, but then you get out there in the field in the fall and you see the potential of these top plants. You see these plants just loaded with hazelnuts. And then, you know, you get them cracked down, roasted, and you're eating them. It's like, whoa, this is so worth pursuing. Again, harvest time is my favorite because you go in there and you start digging around in the plants looking for the nuts, right, to harvest them. And in there is just like this whole world of insect activity. Katydids, walking sticks all over the place, tree frogs, moth larva. I mean, it's just this whole world that you've brought into the agricultural field that wasn't there before. You know, it'd be so great if the American consumer could experience fresh roasted hazelnuts, not the stuff that gets imported from Turkey, and we could grow it in the Midwest and actually have a nut crop that farmers could benefit from. You know, you go out to Oregon and or California and nuts are huge and they're really lucrative, profitable crops. Our growers in the Midwest don't have crop like it. So that's what keeps me going is the potential.
You're tackling these challenges, you know, trying to solve problems for the people that might follow you, but you're working on long timescales here.
Yeah, and I've been at it long enough now, we're definitely seeing generational change. So there was a group of early adopter growers that I started working with, and now they've aged out. They've either died or just retired out. And so now I'm working with a whole new cohort. You know, we want younger active farmers that are ready to take on a 15 to 20 year project because we feel like we're far enough along and that we can start scaling production. So we're seeing that it's shifting from kind of the retiree folks to a younger, more production oriented group. But that's plant breeding. That's woody crop development, is you're standing on shoulders of generations before and you carry the torch for a while and eventually you get it. Mm-hmm. I just can sustain the effort long enough.
Jason Fishbach is the co-leader of the Upper Midwest Hazelnut Development Initiative. He, along with a group of hazelnut curious farmers, spoke with WUWM's Lena Tran. This story is a part of Climate Solutions Week. WUWM and the NPR Network are dedicating this week to stories about climate solutions with a focus on food. You can find more stories at WUWM.com. You can find more interviews like this one by visiting WUWM.com/Lake Effect. And while you're there, subscribe to the Lake Effect Spotlight podcast.